9:21 and you're listening to 89.7 FM in good company. Thank you for tuning in, and joining me in the studio I have Peter Burke. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Lisa. Thank you for having me.
You are most welcome, and thanks for making the trip in and bringing your wonderful book called The Silk Merchant's Son, and I'm really looking forward to finding out more about the story and also about your career and life as a writer. You're also a doctor. And so tell us a bit about yourself, Peter.
Well, I feel very at home on this campus because I'm the GP at Murdoch Uni.
Yeah.
And similarly, at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock in the morning, it's usually very quiet there. Students still having a snooze.
Yeah.
So it's very peaceful here this morning. So I'm a GP, a West Australian fella, went to UWA. And about once a decade, I knock out a lazy work of West Australian historical fiction. So that's what I've done this time with the story of 28 completely uninvited Catholic missionaries who just lobbed up more or less unexpectedly to the Swan River Colony on the 8th of January 1846.
Right, that's a bit cheeky. They just literally rocked up.
Well, there was a Father John Brady who'd come over here, and there was a very small group of Catholics in Western Australia, and they'd asked the only bishop in the continent, which was Bishop Polding over in Sydney, could they maybe have a priest one day, and he sent John Brady over with a Belgian fellow, and he promptly jumped on a ship, went off to Rome, and got himself made a bishop, and he procured an awful lot of money, and arrived quite unexpectedly in this colony, which was Protestant and English, and didn't have a bishop, an Anglican bishop at all, and he arrived as a Catholic bishop with a whole lot of French and Spanish and Irish clergy, probably more clergy than there were Catholics in the place,
yeah.
And quite unexpectedly, and so that was the basis of this story. We get to know the 28 missionaries and their misadventures, because largely they were misadventures.
Right. And what's the inspiration for choosing this particular topic, Peter?
Well, I mean, I'm a Catholic boy from the 60s, so we all learned about two famous characters that are in the book, mm-hmm. who was Dom Salvado, the hero of, as we learned it as kids, of course. We review it very differently now in mm-hmm. 2023. But he was a saint-like figure who established New Norcia, and Sister Ursula Frayne, who was the Mother Superior of the Sisters of Mercy. And that probably makes everyone's eyes water. They go, oh, you know, these folk. And it sort of made our eyes water as kids too. But it turns out the actual story is a lot more interesting. And I guess the thing that really turned me round to, man, this is pretty interesting stories, was when I read the memoirs of a fellow called Dom Leandre Fontaine, who was a French novice mm-hmm. who came out here. And he was a gossipy fellow who wrote memoirs, endless letters. Every day he wrote to his beloved abbot from Perth back to his abbot back in France, and it was all gossipy and whingy and funny and also intelligent and compulsive reading, and it gave sort of the dirt on what was happening, and I thought, this is fantastic. So he's a major character in the book.
Yeah. Fascinating. And how long did it take you to write this book? Yeah, obviously a lot of research.
It did. So what I wanted to do, you know, it's historical fiction, but I take the history seriously, yeah. but I also want to mess with mm-hmm. it a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I read, these were all prolific writers.
Yeah.
The nuns all wrote letters home, and they're surprising. They're just women writing back, yeah. often funny and silly, mm-hmm. And all their letters were compiled by Geraldine Byrne, West Australian historian, in a book called Valiant Women.
Mm-hmm.
So you could read those ones, and so I could use their voices and appropriate what mm-hmm. I think they might have said in other sort of situations. Salvado wrote his memoirs. Little Leandre Fontaine wrote his naughty memoirs. So there's lots of material. So for all these characters, plus lots of West Australian contemporary characters, such as, you know, Irwin and George Fletcher Moore and so on, they were all great writers. Everyone wrote a lot, so there's a lot of material that you can get into their heads.
Yeah.
And then I'm a writer of fiction, so I do naughty things with it. So hopefully it's funny and thought provoking, and takes us on a journey, so we get to know these folk.
Yeah. Okay. And this is book number.
This is number three.
Number three. Mm-hmm.
So what I like to do really is to, because I honestly think a lot of people. With Western Australian history, they yawn and stretch and roll their eyes and think, oh, it's, we know it. And so what I try to do is dust off stories that West Australians think they know pretty well.
Right.
So my previous one was C.Y. O'Connor, and everyone thinks they know that story, but there's so many interesting aspects to that. Mm. And prior to that, I had one that we called the Drowning Dream that was shortlisted for the Vogel and the WA premiers, and that was set up in Broome in the 1920s in the pearling industry, based around a true story. So this one here, most West Australians have been around for a while, mm-hmm. think they know this story, and I'm pretty sure they don't.
Right.
Because we sort of got the expurgated version.
Yeah, okay. And how do you find time to write? Because it's, it's a heavy process, and it obviously takes a lot of time and detail to get all the facts right, and also to be in that creative space. How do you find the time when you're a busy doctor?
It's a creative hobby. I greatly admire professional writers.
Yeah.
It's a luxury for me in that I can spend time enjoying the process, and I really do enjoy the process. I love it.
Mm.
So I'm a bit of a magpie. I love getting lots of bits of information and then say, okay, I've got this huge mound of information. How do I turn it into a cogent story which has a narrative?
Yeah. And do you have a particular way of writing? Are you a morning person? Are you a night person? Do you like to be indoors, outdoors? Have you got a particular space that you are most creative in?
The Kimberley is where I do most of my writing. Yeah. So I go up there and do locums. I still work in Derby and Fitzroy and Kununurra. And when I'm up there, there's not much to do sometimes. Mm-hmm. and so I can bring all my material up, spread it all out undisturbed. When you get home from working in the emergency department, and that's probably where I get to be most productive.
Inspired by nature and none of the usual distractions of the city life.
Yeah, it's for some reason that's very true. Just time evaporates in the city, and you seem to have time when you head up there.
Wonderful. Mm. So, Peter, you've offered to read us a little bit of the book, and looking forward to tell us a bit about the passage you're going to read, and then over to you.
Sure. So, look. This book is called The Silk Merchant's Son. Now, mostly it's historical, but it has some fictional characters, including the Silk Merchant's Son.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a French fellow who's age 31, an adjunct professor of linguistics at an invented university in Lyon. And why is he in there? Well, look, he's in there for a few reasons, because I've got him as a newly converted atheist.
Yeah.
And I wanted us to be in the book a little bit. Most people opening a book now in 2023, and they see it's about the colonial experience and about Catholic proselytising, will probably have already made up their mind a little bit about what they think about the outcome of that.
Yeah.
But this is 1846. And I wanted there to be some people amongst these missionaries who were questioning and sceptical, and also gave me a chance for some humour. And Fabrice was my guy. So this scene is in the grounds of Lorette, which is the mansion, you can still visit it, in Lyon, of the saintly Virgin of Lyon, Pauline Jaricot. And she is, at age 22, set up the most successful charity in the Catholic Church. So she's got lots of money to give to priests who are going overseas to save souls. And she's on the balcony with Fabrice's father, and he's trying to get her to give money to Fabrice to get him out of town for misdeeds. So, and he's late, of course, because Fabrice is always late. Just tell me your view, Claude, please and smartly. Should I trust Bishop Brady with the Society's money? Money. That was the lovely word which fully restored Claude's attention. This was the moment in any business transaction that he would present the client with his solution to her problem. But tonight, where was the solution? A great opportunity seemed to glow in the cupped hands of the silk merchant, a firefly slowly dying. Then the garden gate opened and Fabrice Clerico appeared. He was not in a hurry. He saw them, began to stroll up the path, but then stopped to talk with the Senegalese gardener. "Excuse me, Pauline," said Claude, feigning as much good humour as he could manage. "I will fetch him." Claude met his beloved son halfway down the garden path. As viewed from behind, a loving father warmly embraced his somewhat tardy son. Fabrice, however, received a different view of the encounter. His father's face declared that he would rather have smacked the son's cheek than hug him. Strong, bony thumbs pressed hard into the flesh at the front of his shoulders. "Ouch!" yelped Fabrice Clerico. His first words in the book. "You are late, boy," Claude snarled, while gently turning his dear son around to face the hostess and stroking his back with great affection. "Kiss her hand, say nothing stupid, agree to every proposition, and do not ask questions." The expression on Fabrice's face was, like his father's, one of perfect calm. He had learned in childhood to rise above provocations. "Naturally, father," said Fabrice, the perfect reasonableness in his voice calculated to annoy. He was not, after all, the callow youth of his father's imagination. He was a 31-year-old and assistant professor of linguistics. "But, father, you do recall that I have become an atheist. Why then would you ask me to meet..." "No questions," replied the father, whose attempt to smile for the hostess made him grimace like a ventriloquist dummy. "Later, perhaps, at home."
Thank you, Peter. What a delightful character, the newly converted atheist.
Yes, he's very vacillating atheist. He's not very good at it. He keeps remembering important things like the number of buttons on a bishop's soutane, right. And he hopes with time that will disappear. But during the book, he goes on a bit of a spiritual journey. Mm. He certainly doesn't become religious, but he goes through various... he joins a hippie commune a humanist hippie commune I've invented in 2J to run in parallel with New Norcia. So again, you know, we're reading it in 2023. Yeah. I want there to be the sort of questions that I would ask of this whole project. I want it to be there for the reader. So in fact, he's given a pot of money by the Saintly Virgin to give to the mission which is doing the best work for Aboriginal people.
Wonderful.
And he looks at these three Catholic missions, the northern, the central and the southern, and go, "I don't really think any of them are that good." So he joins this hippie commune in 2J, and which isn't a success either, of course. So so ultimately, most of these do turn out to be an exercise in futility, but there's lots of interesting diversions on the way and lots to think about, I think.
Sounds delightful indeed. And what a treat for myself and our listeners to have an author in the studio reading your very own book. So that is that's pretty special, and thank you so much for doing that. So last night you had a bit of a soft launch at the City of Perth Library?
Correct, yeah that's right. So and I didn't realise at the time, but the City of Perth Library, it's a beautiful building.
It is.
And when I was invited, I hadn't really thought it through, but of course it's in Pierce Street.
Mm-hmm.
And so I read a passage which is when the missionaries arrived at Pierce Street, which was named Pierce Street because that's where the pier was, and actually read a passage where the missionaries were arriving and heading up Pierce Street towards the newly built church, which is still there, actually. This little church in Victoria Avenue called St. John's Pro Cathedral was built by these missionaries back in 1846 and somehow didn't get demolished in the 1970s. But a nice little launch, cheerful, and it seemed to be quite well received, actually.
That's wonderful. And are you doing some more book readings and appearances and signings around town?
Yes, well, there's a launch at Open Book in Mosman Park there on the 6th of May.
Mm-hmm.
But the book becomes available on the 1st of May at all good independent booksellers.
And so that's next week. It's May already.
it is indeed. Yeah. May Day, the 1st of Monday, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the book is out on the wonderful Fremantle Press.
Frio Press has done a beautiful job. Now, radio doesn't transmit the beautiful cover.
It is.
Can you confirm?
Yes, beautiful ruby cloth with a very interesting character. Which character is that on the front?
So that's Fabrice on the front there, and sprinkled with silkworms. He is quite good looking. It was. They actually photoshopped me, Lisa. That's not true. But look, not ruby.
Okay.
That colour is called amaranth. It's very important. And amaranth is the colour of a bishop's cap or zecchetto. Okay. And the reason that's important is later in that same scene I said, they discover that they're about to go in to see the priests, and Fabrice has worn an amaranth scarf, which greatly upsets the bishop, because only bishops are allowed that colour.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning, Peter Berg, author of The Silk Merchant's Son, available from Monday, or May the 1st, on Fremantle Press and in all good independent bookstores. And if you hop on the Fremantle Press website or Facebook page or even your own page, which is Peter Berg Writer, you can find out more about the book and your journey and where you'll be appearing in Perth. Thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Lisa, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for your interest.
Thank you.